Hello, friends and folks, and welcome back to another Gimmick Award category for Scanline Media's 2019 Game of the Year Deliberations. I'm Six Detmar.
And I'm Jennifer Uncle.
And I'm Kyrie Page.
And you know, it's fun to talk about the games of the year, but if we're being fully honest, most years I feel like we play more games that didn't come out that year.
Absolutely. That was most of my year last year, was playing games that are not exactly from this year.
Yeah. There's a healthy wealth. I couldn't decide if I want to say well or wealth, so I just sort of said half of both, and it sounded terrible. Of old games that we're all getting around to, because here's the thing, is there are a lot of video games out there, and nobody's played them all, and a lot of them, well, you know, you need to get around to. So we're here to talk about the best old game for us in 2019.
Indeed.
This list is going to be very much about the experiences we had with these games. I'm sure this is a list where a lot of you are going to be like, well, why the fuck are we talking about this game? But I think we can make the case for it. So, Jen, could you read our nominees, please?
Sure thing. So our nominees are Kerbal Space Program, Shenmue, Pokemon Let's Go Eevee, .hack://
You just say .hack:GU, you don't.
.hack:GU, last recode. Street Fighter V, Sims 4, Fable 2, Prey, Pyre, Portopia's Serial Murder Case, The Legend of Zelda, A Link to the Past, and Umineko, When They Cry.
Yeah, so a lot of representation from all across the spectrum. Portopia is an NES game, and then we had like .hack, which was just from a couple of years ago, as was Kerbal. So we're kind of all over the place here.
Yeah, and probably the most recent game on here, I was going to say Street Fighter V, but that's not true. I don't know why I say untrue things.
Because you're a liar, it's okay.
Yeah.
No, the most recent game on here, I think, is Let's Go Eevee.
Yeah, it's probably tied between Let's Go Eevee and Pyre, or at least they're close together.
Yeah, I think Let's Go Eevee was, like, November of 2018, so... And Pyre was earlier in the year, but... Definitely both more recent games. Go ahead.
I was just going to say that's neither here nor there as we talk about the list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So several of these are games that we have had features to do with in some regard. Talked about, you know, we did some Sims content this year. We did Pyre and Portopia for... Novel Not New. I kept trying to get a Fable podcast off the ground with my friend Connor, and Connor was just like, listen, I work all but like 5 minutes every day, and those 5 minutes you were asleep, this podcast is not going to work. And I'm like, okay. But then there are sort of some oddballs out here. And not necessarily they're odd, just sort of like, to the outsider, it's not as obvious why we would have picked them. Kyrie, tell us about your 2019 with The Legend of Zelda Link to the Past, if you would.
So, specifically, the version that I got into is The Legend of Zelda Link to the Past Randomizer. And for those who are unaware, basically what it does is a program shuffles around all the items and collectibles in that game around from their vanilla locations, and your objective is to complete the game as fast as you can by finding the items that are, of course, not in their usual locations. And I got heavy into that last year. It's very simple to play because I've played a lot of Legend of Zelda Link to the Past, but there's something really fun about running around, like, not knowing what you're going to get next. And what happens is you get items out of order, and it allows you to do things that the game is not built to handle. So you're beating bosses in like orders and weapons that are not intended, so they usually go by faster or in some cases slower. So it's all randomized, and there's a lot of variations on the randomizer that have been done. Probably one of the more prominent ones was earlier this year was a crowd control randomizer at AGDQ. And that is what happens there is people can spend money to actively fuck with the player's game. And it's a lot of fun. And basically, I have just been, I watch it a lot, I play it a lot, and it's, there's something really fun to, like, playing a game that you know, like, know by heart, and seeing elements that are not, like, there, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So, that is kind of what the Link to the Past randomizer is, like, all about. Like, it's, again, it's a lot of fun. If you have played A Link to the Past before, and you want to try something new, the randomizer is a really cool, like, thing to do. And it kind of spawned a bunch of other randomizers to varying degrees of effects. I heard there's, like, a Kingdom Hearts 2 randomizer, and I don't know how the hell that one even works.
Yeah. Maybe it makes the plot make more sense.
But yeah. That's what I spent a lot of my 2019 playing. And I just love it. There's, it's a lot of fun to be had.
All right. Sounds like a strong contender. I'm gonna go ahead and cut Street Fighter V. I put Street Fighter V on here because with the Championship Edition upgrade in 2019. Street Fighter V finally became a good game. Not a great game, just a good game, because it had been a bad game up until then.
Oh, it had been a bad game for quite a while, but then it actually became something like resembling a good game.
Mm-hmm. But it's still kind of a mess. There's still like characters whose design just like sucks. There are like janky stuff in the hitboxes. The netcode is still atrocious. And it doesn't feel like it's necessarily a best old game in that the parts of it that are old kind of are shit. But also, it's not new enough to rate in our Game of the Year list. I just wanted to mention, like, hey, Street Fighter V is finally kind of worth playing.
Yeah. No, it's like, I can agree with that. I played a bunch of Street Fighter V this year at local tournament, this past year at local tournaments, and that was a lot of fun. But again, that game, it's taken them a while to get that game to a state that it's worth playing.
Yeah, it definitely has.
I'm still upset that they fucked up Juri.
Yeah, I don't love her new move list, but her new play style. But here we are, I guess.
Also, it's petty, but I still think that game is really fucking ugly. Like, the way that the models are, the way that the 3D models are done feels a lot doughier than they were with Street Fighter 4. Like, they aren't leaning as hard on the stylization, and I think it kind of hurts them. But it does seem like some of the later characters they came out with over time look a bit better than those original characters.
Yeah, it's an interesting situation because the characters are all, like, the models for all the characters were sent to different contractors. And you can extremely tell, because some people were done by good contractors and some were not. You look at Alex, and he looks like a nightmare. And you look at Urien, and you're like, you look kind of cool. It's just like, it's so hit and miss. It's really inconsistent.
Yeah, I mean, like, while I was at MAGFest, I watched a few matches of Street Fighter 4, and guess what? Street Fighter 4 still looks like a great game.
Yeah, I actually did play some Street Fighter 4 this year, both like, I played some on my PC, and I also, for the first time ever, played some in an arcade in San Francisco, and that was fun.
Oh, yeah. Street Fighter 4, like, was an absolute astounding success, and it's kind of amazing how bad they fucked it up with Street Fighter V.
The one bummer of my Street Fighter IV arcade experience was that it was an arcade in a mall in downtown San Francisco. And so I sat down and I was just playing some Super Street Fighter IV. I don't think it was arcade edition. I think it was just regular Super. And I was just, you know, playing the single player. I was doing my Seth thing, being like, hey, they've still got these muscles. I actually can still play this game. People were coming and going, and I was just sort of like, I'll just wait for someone to, you know, quarter up and challenge me. And I was just waiting and waiting, and then someone walked up and clearly was gonna sit down, and then saw me, like, comboing the CPU, and was like, oh, never mind, I'm not that good. And I was like, oh, no.
No.
Come back. this was a bummer.
That's a bit of a bummer. I think I know what arcade you went to as well, because was it in Japantown?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's where they had a busted Taiko machine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a nightmare to play on that thing, but I still played it because I love Taiko no Tatsujin. Anyway, yeah, what were we talking about? Street Fighter V?
Well, I think we were done talking about Street Fighter V, actually.
So, one thing I want to bring up, .hack.gu last recode, from my understanding, that was something that was volunteered by someone else within our friend group who isn't necessarily here on this podcast.
No, that was me.
Oh, okay.
I played a bunch of that game this year.
Oh, okay. I thought it was Alan, but if you played it, we could definitely hear about that.
I mean, we can probably cut it. It's .hack.gu. .hack.gu fucking rules. I don't know that it's especially relevant to 2019. It's just sort of like these other games, I feel like it said something about 2019 that I played them. .hack is just like, oh, hey, I had a way to play .hack, so I did, because I love .hack, you know?
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Does GU still hold up?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, it has its flaws, but it's still like a easy, breezy, beautiful cover girl JRPG. It's still, you know, fast and smooth and fun, and the story is cliche but enjoyable, and the characters are all right.
Yeah, I still need to play my copy, like Alan's currently playing my copy over Steam Family Sharing, but it's definitely what I want to get to.
Mm-hmm.
I remember reading, like, one of the light novels for .hack.gu, and the story is cliche, but it still is a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. And .hack, as a franchise, has some really, really big swings in quality. So that's the whole thing. I think GU ranks among the best parts of .hack, but then you've also got, you know, like, AI Buster and all this other shit that's... Well, listen, I used the word shit for a reason, right? But yeah, .hack.gu, not necessarily a best old game of 2019, just kind of a best old game in general. Because .hack rules.
Okay.
This is going to be a weird take here, Jen. I actually think we should remove Shenmue from this list because we're going to talk about it for 2020.
Yeah, like, at least for me, I started and finished that game in 2020, and it sounds like you still have a ways to go before you get to the end of it.
Mm-hmm. We're going to play Shenmue 2 and 3, and we're going to have a whole Shenmue experience this year.
Can I ride along on that? Because I watched Jen play most of Shenmue, and guess what? Can we talk a little bit about Shenmue, like, real quick?
I mean, well, Kyrie, I don't know what your schedule is like, but in February, we'll be recording a podcast called That's a Shenmue, and you're invited.
Okay, because all I know is when Jen was playing it, I was waiting. I was basically suggesting to her, it's like, hey, we should play some Shenmue, because I want to see what happens next.
Shenmue's cool. I feel like this year, like, I was trying to describe it to my sister, and my older sister, who plays video games, but mostly watches LPs these days because she has two kids, has, like, quirky taste in games. Like, she likes, like, weirder or like experimental games, and so Shenmue should be right up her alley, but the reputation is such that I had a hard time selling her. And the thing I had to explain to her, and well, yeah, as I say, we'll have a proper podcast about this, but the thing about Shenmue is Shenmue is like the main character has seen like Kung Fu revenge movies and is trying to live one in his life, but he's living in the real world.
That's a pretty apt analogy for what happens in Shenmue, because I adore the fact that you have to catch a bus and go to a job and do a series of mundane things before you get to the Kung Fu murder revenge fantasy.
And you're like, you're walking up to like the local grocer and being like, have you seen any Chinese people? And they're like, whoa, that's a fucked up thing to say, my guy. I mean, I guess. What do you want?
Or it's like, there's lots of Chinese people. Like, what are you talking about, Ryo?
Have you seen any thugs? And they're like, define thug? Do you want some ramen? I make ramen. That's what I do here. I don't really monitor the comings and goings of thugs, Ryo. It's wonderful. I love it. And we will talk a lot more about it next month.
Okay, is there one you want to tackle, Kirie?
Tell me about Pyre.
Pyre is Supergiant's best game. And we played it for Novel Not New in 2019. So for us, it's a 2019 game. Pyre is so you're set out with like, okay, this is like fantasy NBA Jam, which I think is I think sounds better than it actually is. The gameplay's all right. I was not in love with it, but the story and characters and writing of Pyre are about like they're about a prison system. They're about a culture of shame and exile, and they're about political revolution. And I think it's just like, it's just the best writing they've ever done by far. It's just an incredible, like, and that's, I like Hades a lot, but Pyre's writing is just unassailable.
I also appreciate the way that the game is written around the possibility that you will win some matches and lose some matches, and it doesn't feel like you're getting, oh, I imagine if the ultimate goal ended up being a failure, you'd probably feel pretty disappointed. But overall, there are some cases where you meet some people and you're like, hey, you're on the enemy team, but you seem like a pretty okay person, and I wouldn't mind you getting this thing that I'm trying to get for my other characters.
See, here's me, like, doing, like, whirlwind dunks and then yelling at the old dog, play basketball better, old man! but yeah, I think Pyre is a really strong contender on this list because, first of all, it's just really fucking good. And also, I feel like for Novel Not New, it was one of the, like, there are two Novel Not New games on here, and I think they are the two of this year that were really breakout. I really like Long Live the Queen, but I don't think on my co-host it left as big of an impression.
Yeah, it's a cool game, but it didn't stick out to me as much as it did for you.
Isn't Long Live the Queen the one where you're trying to prevent someone from being murdered?
Mm-hmm.
And you just fail spectacularly, like, pretty much every route?
Do you know Princess Maker?
Yes.
It's Princess Maker if everyone was trying to murder the princess.
Incredible.
It's great! But, yeah, no. Other people on this podcast don't feel as strongly, and that's fine. It's not... I had played it before. It's not a 2019 game to me. And it's not a best for Jen, so here we are.
In that regard, should I rip the Band-Aid off and talk Umineko?
Sure. Make us cry.
So, Umineko is... Well, first off, the way that it's presented is two halves, question arcs and answer arcs. That is a lie. It is technically 8 video games presented as chapters, and as soon as you finish one or two of them, you understand, oh, each one of these chapters is like 15 to 30 hours long and has its own credit sequence. So The way it was initially released, it was meant to not be played back-to-back, but there was a period earlier in 2019 where I was unemployed, and I went through the first chapters of... the first two chapters of Umineko, and maybe, like, half of the third one, pretty closely together. And part of that was just me having a lot of free time, but also it's a very... despite its length, it's one of those games that just kind of spirals and spirals and spirals and keeps adding new things that you're kind of just in awe at how stacked and wild the story is. Like, this is slight spoilers, but overall it's not going to give away the entire mystery or anything like that. Or even... not even most of the mystery, because I've just played through chapters 1 through 3, and there's still the majority of the game left. But yeah, you are a teenager named Battler. You are going to your rich family's island to basically... it's basically grandfather's island, and all of your relatives are fighting to be the new heir. And all of a sudden, they start getting killed within groups in pretty grisly ways. That first chapter ends with everyone dying, including you. And from there, it spirals out to a point where it goes from horror game to Phoenix Wright-style investigation. Like, you're playing a game of chess, more or less, with this eternal witch named Beatrice, and your whole goal is to disprove that witches exist by finding out the exact way in which a human could have committed this. And it has elements of horror. Like, people make some really fucked up faces in that game at unexpected moments, or characters you think are okay end up snarling, and you're like, oh shit, this person is not good at all. And it's one of those things where this author has the person who wrote these games has a bone to pick with traditional mystery storytelling. Like, there's a specific mystery author who set out a number of rules that cannot happen within a good murder mystery, including locked rooms and stuff like that. So the creator of Umineko is like, oh, so you hate locked rooms? I've set up this circle of locked rooms within locked rooms that set up one massive locked room made of 8 locked rooms. Fuck you. And every time, in addition to making commentary about the mystery genre at large, it's also getting into some really... it's getting into some biting social commentary about generational wealth, patriarchy, all sorts of stuff. And yes, it is the longest thing I've ever attempted to play, and it'll likely be 2021 before I actually get to the end of it, just because I have to take breaks every now and then, because it's so long. But it's telling a story that seems like it couldn't be told in any other format. And that's really impressive to me.
So the part of this that really makes it magical for me is that a few months, maybe just a month before you announced you were going to play Umineko, I was talking to my sister, the sister who I explained Shenmue to, and she just finished watching a Let's Play of Umineko, and she basically, over the course of a long phone call, laid out everything. And then you were like, hey, I'm going to play Umineko. It's like this murder mystery game. And I'm like, ah, ha, 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 ha. I mean, yes, no, it's just a murder mystery game. Have a good time, Jen. It's been very funny for me.
I can imagine, yeah, because going in not knowing exactly what it is, or, like, even now it finds ways to continuously surprise me. Like, a new character got introduced at the end of chapter 3, and it's the most mind-boggling, okay, we're doing this now? All right, I guess this is happening now.
Are you talking about the bunny girls?
No, the bunny girls are weird too. Like, a pair of British bunny girls, the Chester sisters, coming in and just doing a bunch of grisly murders and making noises like nya every third or fourth line they do. It's like, what the fuck is going on? But, yeah, it's one of those things that's so massive that it can take weird turns like that, and it will totally catch you by surprise. And it still manages to continue the main story somehow in spite of all of this, and that's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
But I also totally understand if we need to cut it, because it's something that's very much me on my own journey, and I also understand that video games, for the most part, probably shouldn't be this long. Though, to be fair, I'm making it worse for myself by playing with a fan patch that adds in all the voice acting from the PS3 version, so I'm spending a lot of time listening to people scream in pain or cackle, or just spend a long time talking because some of them are really old characters. Are really old people, and they spend a lot of time repeating the same lines and just getting very emotional about what's going on.
It's sounding like I should cut Fable 2. If that podcast had ever happened, I think I'd have a stronger argument, but as is, I just played a bunch of Fable this year, like 1, 2, and 3, because Fable's cool and I miss Fable.
Yeah, Fable's one of those things where it feels like, at the time, those games were ripped apart, at least Fable 2 and 3 were, because everyone was focusing on the ridiculous shit Peter Molyneux said. But, it's one of those things where if you just take them for what they are, they seem like pretty damn good games.
The only real problem with them, and I know this sounds ridiculous, I would love like a 4K remaster of the trilogy, because God, the frame rate on those games is shit. And you have like rhythm games where it's running at 10 frames a second, and you're like, this makes it really hard to time, y'all. It's bad in that sense. But I don't know, you're like as the like dethroned or not dethroned, you're in Fable 3, you're a runaway princess who is staging a coup to take over the kingdom from your brother, who is a usurper and a tyrant. And you're like, okay, I gotta start the ground floor. I gotta build, you know, my resistance, and I gotta get people on my side. I'm gonna stand at a street side stall and make pies for 7 hours. And you're like, this game developers don't do this, usually for a good reason, but I'm here for it.
Yeah, it's one of those games, it's one of those series that mixes epic adventures with giving yourself titles like Chicken Chaser, or flirting with people, or making them angry by making kissy faces or farting in their faces.
And I played a bunch of those games, like, back in the day, but, like, I was playing Fable 3 this year, and they just have, you know, like, the random, like, stats things on loading screens where they're just like, oh, enemies hit, you know, 373. And I was doing that, and just a thing popped up that said, orgies had 0. And I was like, excuse me?
That's a thing you could do?
Apparently! or they're just fucking with me with the stats, which would be pretty funny.
That would be a pretty good joke.
But no, I bet that's a real thing, because you definitely can get married and have sex and have kids and also get married to one person per town, and then it's possible for them to find out and get mad at you. There's a lot of weird relationship shit, even in Fable 2.
It feels very British from the top down in terms of its sense of humor. Well,
that's a nice pie.
Thankfully, I never noticed any of the other type of British humor, which is transphobia, but that might have been something I missed because I haven't played those games fully.
No, I don't think... I can't think of that ever coming up.
That's good.
You know, also I didn't play these games to completion this year, and so maybe I'm forgetting, but I don't think so. Pokemon Let's Go Eevee is mostly on here out of protest because I played Pokemon Let's Go Eevee in the work up to Sword and Shield, and then when all said and done, I had more fun with Let's Go Eevee.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
Huh.
The game has a lot more personality than Sword and Shield.
Yikes. Because I looked at footage of Let's Go Eevee and Let's Go Pikachu, and it felt kind of lifeless to me.
I mean, like, running around is running around, right? Like, every Pokemon game, watching someone walk around in the overworld is not going to do much for you. But, like, having... I honestly feel like the sort of Pokemon Yellow style thing of having a Pokemon who is your companion and participates in things breathes so much life into the game. Having my Eevee, like, riding around and, like, you know, like, hop off my shoulders to go investigate and play in a fountain when we're just walking around town. Or dressing my Eevee up in, like, a backwards cap and shades. Like, it just has a lot of personality that, as I say, I feel like Sword and Shield really was lacking.
Also, you mentioned it's like a stealth remake of Pokemon Yellow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's something to, like you said, there is something appealing about having a Pokemon that is your companion that goes around with you and does things rather than just sits in the Pokeball all day.
No, don't worry. It's really nice in the PC. but yeah, I think we can cut that one. And I'll also cut Prey. It's mostly just because I got an Xbox One and a Game Pass in 2019. I played Arkane Studios Prey, and that's a good game, it turns out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems like it's doing the BioShock thing better than BioShock. And... like, it's one of those immersive sim type things where you can pick up most anything that isn't nailed down, and you even get into some wonky, almost game-breaky stuff with the way that you can transform into inanimate objects, and the enemies can do that too. But, yeah, it's something I want to go back to at some point, but when I... The two times when I tried to play it to any length, I was terrible at it, so...
The game is really, like, it gets better, but it is really aggressively hard at points. Because there are enemies you just can't fight, basically, until pretty far into the game. And it's not like a nemesis thing where it's like, oh, you just have to run away. It's like, oh, there's this enemy you just can't fight, and they're standing 2 feet in front of the elevator you have to use to continue the story. And it's like, well, okay, what the fuck am I supposed to do? It can be a little exasperating in that sense.
Mm-hmm. So, Kerbal Space Program, that was a 2019 game for you?
That was a 2019 game for you, motherfucker.
Yeah, we went to
the
moon.
We streamed it together, asshole.
We went to the moon, Jennifer.
Oh, yeah.
We went to the moon, we built the inverse rocket, we rescued people from space, I sent probes to every corner of the goddamn galaxy. What was it a 2019 game? Fuck off.
I thought that this was mostly here because of your experiences with it, but you're right. I did have a whole lot of fun playing Kerbal Kerbal in 2019.
I have very fond memories of watching you build a rocket, you and Kyrie, seeing you fuck up the build, and you being like, is this good? And I'm like, we'll talk about it after the fact.
I love it when my naivete combines with your willingness to stay silent for a bit to create something magical.
I mean, there's a reason they call it rocket science, right? It's hard.
Turns out it is really hard to get somebody to... get somebody to space and surviving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I would put Kerbal in our top three, personally. I think it was a magical 2019 experience, and I think it kind of is the game that I think we sort of had our best streaming experiences with this year.
I agree with that, for sure. Yeah, I'm cool keeping Kerbal here.
Okay. Sims 4 we did our Sims feature, but honestly, it wasn't as big as I planned for it to be. Because I love The Sims, but kind of part of the nature of The Sims is it's hard to keep playing The Sims. You kind of come in and out constantly, I feel like.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how much of a 2019 game it was.
Yeah, and you can go in like we did and Giant Bomb did with specific goals that you want to accomplish there, a little zany, but even then, it's difficult to get them to do what you want them to do, or at least sometimes it feels like you have to do whatever you can to rip things up to make interesting things happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
Looking at everything here, I feel like I'd be comfortable cutting Portopia's serial murder case. Like, it's a really great game, and playing it, as M commented, opens your eyes to how much all of these other murder mystery slash detective games are working from the same book. But it's a game that you basically have to play with a guide in the modern era, and that's not a bad thing per se, but there's a lot of things that it assumes you know that you can't know unless you're intimately familiar with Japan and specific phone numbers in Japan.
And also there's stuff like there's a point where you have to find an item by like basically like pixel hunting on a door, and there's no indication that you need to do that. There's a maze underground for kind of no reason. There's a lot of, like, you know, it was one of, if not the first murder mystery games, and I have a ton of respect for it for that, but its playability is not as high as you might hope. I think it's great, and I think people should play it, but yeah, you do need a guide or it's kind of unplayable.
Mm-hmm. And it's also fascinating with the way that it was one of Yuji Horii's bigger games before Dragon Quest came along. Like, it's the one he made almost immediately before Dragon Quest. But, it's one of those situations where there's a reason why Dragon Quest is more easily remembered than Portopia. At least in the U.S. Like,
well, because Portopia never came out here. That's why.
Yeah, basically.
Like, just imagine the reality in which we're on Portopia Serial Murder Case 11, Echoes of an Elusive Age.
Square Enix did a remake of Portopia, but it was only on mobile phones in Japan, which is interesting.
Hmm. All right, we're down to 4.
I'm okay with Umineko going, just because I think that Link to the Past should be here, and Pyre is something that both Six and I have a lot of really good had a lot of really good experiences with, and the three of us had a lot of fun with those Kerbal streams.
Yeah,
like, okay,
honestly, like, the ranking to me feels like Kerbal 1, Pyre 2nd, Link to the Past 3.
Wow, that's really presumptuous of you, Kyrie. We hadn't even made the cut, but yeah, no, I actually basically agree.
I don't really have any arguments with that, yeah. Like, Link to the Past, it's really cool what people continue to do with that game to make it fresh and interesting. Pyre might be either be my favorite or my second favorite Supergiant game, and I've loved pretty much everything they've done so far, so that's saying something. And I did feel a real sense of accomplishment when we finally reached the moon in Kerbal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hey, if you thought that fucking Transistor sucked, you need to try again. You're wrong.
Transistor was a really fucking good game.
I agree.
Yeah, Also, if you thought the thing about Transistor was that the combat was good but the story was bad, you've got it completely backwards. Hades is them finally making the Transistor combat good.
Yeah, pretty much.
God.
But anyway,
I need to replay. I need to play through Pyre, because Pyre seems like a banger. Like, I love Supergiant's like games in general, and definitely need to play that.
Yeah, I think you'd have a good time with it. I don't think it's on the Switch yet, but it probably is coming there soon, since they've been backporting all their older games. And I think it's on PS4, PC, and Xbox. But don't hold me to that. It might not be on Xbox.
Yeah. Great game. You should play it. But also, either play Kerbal Space Program or watch someone else do it, because Kerbal Space Program is one of those games where I feel like the best experiences you're going to have are collaborative, right? Where you're playing with more than one person and you're bouncing ideas off of each other, because that both draws the best ideas out and the worst ideas out, and it's just something really special.
That's like, and those are hilarious. The Kerbal stream was hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah.
Another reason why I cut Umineko is I don't think I can, in good conscience, recommend it to people. Like, if they want to seek it out for themselves, go ahead and do it. But what you don't know if you're getting into it, like I did, is that it is 8 games. And if you're starting one of them, you might as well play the other 7. And that's just a lot of time. Like, even if you're playing it vanilla without the voice acting, that's still a commitment.
Yeah. Kerbal Space Program 2 coming this year, apparently, if they don't delay it to 2021. Excited for that. That's going to be fun. They're including a lot of, like, theoretical technology from the real world that hasn't been built, but the theory is sound, including the the proposal for an engine on a spaceship that's just it setting off nukes over and over.
Incredible. Oh my god. We need it needs to come out so we can play it.
It's gonna be great. I'm very excited. But until next time, folks, we're taking it to our plug zone here. Kyrie, why don't you take it away?
Follow me on Twitter, KyrieAPage at twitter.com. That's where you'll see my stuff. Trying to post through it. Yeah. Again, don't have a lot of stuff that I've been working on lately. A lot of stuff has been delayed due to life stuff, but yeah, follow me on Twitter and hopefully you won't regret it. No, what am I talking about? You will.
Aw, don't sell yourself short like that. You have a good Twitter account.
Also, you're tall. Don't sell yourself short.
I'm not that tall. Jen's taller.
Yeah, Jen's taller than me too. I'm still tall. Fuck Jen. What a piece of shit. Jen, tell people where to find you on the internet.
So, you can find this piece of shit at GBU3 on Twitter. Most of my stuff is on scanlinemedia.com or patreon.com/scanlinemedia. We just released a new episode of Novel Not New, a True End podcast, which is a visual novel book club. Several of these games that were on this list came from us playing them for that podcast, and you can access that at readinggames.online. And in terms of stuff to look out for in the future, I'll probably have something to say about Kingdom Hearts 3 and Kingdom Hearts Remind. Like, specifically about Remind, but talking about 3 as a whole will be likely necessary for what I have to say about it.
Sure, sure. And I'm Six Detmar. You can find me on Twitter at Six Detmar, SixDetmar. ScanlineMedia.com, patreon.com/ScanlineMedia. You'll notice we've got some personal top 10s or top whatevers of the year. list will be up by the time this goes out. I'll also just quickly shout out an article I just put out as we're recording this, but obviously will be like a week old at this point, which is an article I wrote about cooking and Cook Serve Delicious and taking your mind off the anxieties of the world. You can find that on scanlandmedia.com.
Yeah, it's a great article.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. But until next time, folks, peace out.
Later.
Have a good one.